Good morning. We want to welcome you all here at the Lakeline campus. And for those of you who are joining us at Steiner, we welcome you. And we want to say good afternoon to those who will be joining us at Lakeline PM. And it's back to school time, which means things get busier, right? And maybe you identified a little bit with Paul, you know, passing up that bike every day for the rat race. And it's someday I'm going to have time to take my bike and ride it to work. Or maybe you don't ride bikes, but it's something. It's funny how so many things that we want to do get squeezed out by all the things that we have to do, and we find ourselves waiting for someday. Now, I know that one of the things that most of you probably didn't want to do was to either personally or have someone pour a bucket of ice water on your head. But how many of you here have taken the ice bucket challenge? Okay, identify somebody on your row that hasn't. You can challenge them. I mean, we even have former presidents of the United States that are taking the challenge.
I've been challenged by several Americans to bring awareness to the ALS campaign. Woody Johnson, our daughter Jenna Bush Hager, Coach Jim Harbaugh, and recently Roy McElroy. Now, to you all who've challenged me, I do not think it's presidential for me to be splashed with ice water, so I'm simply going to write you a check.
Ow! That check is for me. I don't want to ruin my hairstyle.
Now it's my privilege to challenge my friend Bill Clinton to the ALS challenge. Yesterday was Bill's birthday, and my gift to Bill is a bucket of cold water. For those of you interested in more information, please look up ALSA.org.
Isn't that good? So that's the humorous side of the issue. The not-so-humorous side is the actual disease, ALS. And I've had two friends in my neighborhood, church members here at Hill Country Bible Church, that were diagnosed with that disease and then passed away from it. And so the idea behind it is that, to support this cause, to help with this. But there's something about what happened to them that is very significant. Both of those two men were told by a doctor that their lifespan would be cut short, that they would have a short period of time to live. That's what they were told. And it significantly changed the way they viewed the days of their life. I wonder, if someone were to say to you, you've got 12 months, would anything change? Wouldn't you do something differently? If someone told you had a month, would you reevaluate your priorities? Would you change anything? If someone told you that you had 24 hours, that 24 hours is all you had left on the planet, would there be things that you would do in the next 24 hours that you wouldn't do if you didn't have that news? One of the problems that we face that's common among us is that most of the things that we value the most, the things that we cherish the most, the things that we believe in the most of those things get squeezed out by the day-to-day responsibilities. And what we say is this: someday, I'm going to meet the love of my life. Someday, I'm gonna go deeper into a relationship. Someday I'm gonna fix something that's broken in me. Someday I'm gonna start having fun. Someday I'm gonna let something go that just weighs me down. Someday I'm going to start living. The problem is there are 7 days in the week, and someday is not one of them. And most of us spend most of our days doing things that we have to do and putting off things that are significant, really meaningful, that bring life to us. And so I just want to challenge you just to spend a moment thinking about this as we begin this message. And just spend a moment wrestling with the question: if I knew that all I had was 30 days left on the planet, what would I do that I know I won't do in the next 30 days? What would I do? What would I reprioritize? What would I bring to bear? Now, the reason why I think this is very important is because God is very interested in you getting the most out of your days. God has a plan for you. It's a good plan so that you would experience the full life. And yet most of us are living on a plan that's subpart of that one. And so we're going to be spending the next 4 weeks looking at some key priorities. And you're not going to want to miss any one of these messages because they're all so good. And by the way, if you're a first-time visitor here, we're glad to have you. Welcome. Maybe you're new to the area. A lot of people moving into the area. Welcome to Central Texas. Welcome to Greater Austin. This is the greatest place in the world to live. So you got here at the right time. It's going to get crowded one of these days. So it's a good thing you got here when you did. You got here at the right time. We're excited about that. God has a plan for you. We're going to be looking at key issues like relationships next week and how to prioritize the week following and how to leave a legacy. So we'll be wrestling with this issue because we don't want to be found waiting for someday. So if you grab a Bible today, we're looking at a passage in the book of James, James chapter 4. James chapter 4, and there are a few verses here where in James, he unpacks for us, he lays out something very important for us to get, and it's going to change the way you think about life. So in the next few minutes, as we look at these truths coming right out of the Bible, it's going to change the way you view your life for the better. Watch what he says, starting in verse 13. He says, "Now listen, you who say today or tomorrow, we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, 'If the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that.' As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins." Now, let's go back and take a closer look at the passage. He starts out and he says, "Now listen." Actually, that phrase is a little bit sarcastic. So you get a little bit of an edge right off the bat that something here is not quite right. He says, "Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money." In other words, he's reflecting to us the common thinking. Common human thinking is this: make a plan, work the plan, and enjoy the success. I mean, actually, for those of you who are life coaches, this sounds kind of right on, doesn't it? Like, you think about that. Isn't this kind of the American way to do things, right? Make a plan, work the plan, and enjoy the success. Now, in this particular passage, he's writing to a primarily Jewish audience. And the approach that's being laid out here would have been actually common for a Jewish family to be working on. In fact, during the period of time when this was written, the Roman Empire was expanding rapidly, and they were building cities around the world. And as they would build a new city, one of the things that they knew that they needed in a city were Jewish merchants. In fact, the Jews had a reputation for being able to be the venture capitalists of the world. Through their networks and relationships and their association with each other, they would find themselves going into a city and actually being the lenders that would allow a city to grow and thrive and prosper. So when James is writing this, you could actually visualize in your mind father and two adult sons and maybe an uncle and a cousin sitting around a table with a map laid out in front of them, looking at the places where Rome was actually building new cities and taking a look at that. And father saying to his eldest son, "Now listen, son, it's time for you to get involved in the family business. So here's what we're going to do. Today or tomorrow, you're going to move to that city. You're going to spend a year there. You're going to open the family business, and you're going to make a profit. You're going to make money." That was not an uncommon conversation to be having. And you say, well, okay, that was what they did. But I actually think that we do this all the time. This is our formula for life. Let me give you an example. Okay, tomorrow, I'm going to take the promotion. It moves me to Portland, but I'm going to plump my 401k, and I'm going to retire in Palm Springs. Or how about this one? I'm going to take 4 AP classes. I'm going to ace my SAT. I'm going to score the scholarship, and I'm going to become an Aggie. All the people that are laughing at the people that made that weird noise right now are the people that couldn't score a scholarship at Texas A&M. Right? Or maybe this one's more common. I'm going to start eating paleo and get the lipo so that I can save for a vacay and look good in Cabo. What's the common ingredient there? Today or tomorrow, I'm going to start doing something. I'm going to do it for a period of time, work my plan. It's going to pay off in the end. I'm going to enjoy the success. Someday, I'm going to be an Aggie. Someday, I'm going to have a world-class experience on the vacation. Someday, I'm going to be able to retire and spoil the grandkids. Someday, 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 someday. And in the middle of all that, James gives this warning. In verse 14, he says, listen, why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. So James warns us that there are really two things that challenge our thinking, our planning, how we approach life. The first thing that challenges it is the issue of time. We actually don't know if we have the time that we believe that we have. And so he challenges us around this concept of time, that rather than looking at time in such a way that we are waiting for someday, we need to look at time in the concept of actually seizing today. Seizing today. It's the carpe diem idea. We don't know whether we have tomorrow. We don't know how long we're going to live. In fact, oftentimes when we think about how long our lives are going to be, or what's involved in our living, what's involved in our lives, we just don't get it at all. I mean, we just don't get it at all. We have a tendency to think, listen, you know, my deal is this. My life is something that's guaranteed me. In fact, oftentimes we look at life this way. We think of our lives as a great ocean. Think of our lives as a great ocean. Like, it's vast. It's deep. It's powerful. It's endless. To think that my life will come to an end, you've got to be kidding me. I plan in this braggadocious way. And yet, James is telling us in verse 14 that our life is actually like a vapor, like a mist. When God looks at our life, that's what God sees. God looks down from heaven, and it's like the morning steam coming off our coffee. It's frail. It's weak. It's very temporary. It's feeble. And so in the midst of that, we wrestle with, is my life a guarantee? Or is my life just momentary and fleeting? In fact, some of us have taken the passage in Psalm 90 to say that all of us are guaranteed 70 or 80 years. That's our life. And if people live less than that, they got cheated out of life. They didn't get a full life. If you read that passage carefully and you study it, basically what the psalmist is saying is that a few people make it to 70, maybe to 80, and life is actually hard in the process, but nowhere in Scripture does it promise that any of us can count on tomorrow. And so the psalmist actually says this in Psalm 39. He says, "Show me, O Lord, my life's end and the number of my days." Now, why would anybody want to know how many days they have left? Why would you want to know that? He goes on to say, "Let me know how fleeting my life is. I need to understand how fleeting my life is, because I will stop looking at someday and start living today." He goes on to say, "You've made my days a mere handbreadth." You know how big a handbreadth is? It's from the tip of your thumb all the way across to the tip of your little finger. Hold up your hand, look at it. Look at that. That's your life. That's how big it is. That's how long it lasts. He goes on to say, "The span of my years is as nothing before you. Each man's life is but a breath. Man is a mere phantom as he goes to and fro. He bustles about, but only in vain. He heaps up wealth, not knowing who will get it." Since we don't have a guaranteed future, if a person lives 20 years, that's 20 years of a gift. 40 years, he had the gift of 40 years. 60 years, the gift of 60 years. We are not actually guaranteed a long life. And even those of us who live for a long time, it seems like it goes by so fast. And we're being challenged by God not to waste today banking on someday, but to seize today, use today, enjoy today, experience all that God has for us in this particular day. Now, through the advent of modern technology, a secular group got a hold of this idea and started thinking about how it would improve the quality of our lives if we actually recognized how fast life is moving forward and how fast it goes away. So they came up with this idea of a watch called the ticker, T-I-K-K-E-R. They call it the happiness watch, and the watch actually calculates, based on actuarial tables, how long you're going to live. And when you put it on and wear it, it is actually counting down the years, the months, the days, the hours, and the minutes and seconds of what you have left. So when you waste 30 minutes watching one of those dumb sitcoms, you look at your watch and go, "Well, not going to get that back." That's gone. Now, as morbid as that may feel to some of you, it actually brings reality to life. I've got this precious life. So what am I going to do with it today? Steve Jobs, who is arguably one of the most successful individuals, at least at accomplishing his agenda in life, once wrote this. He said, "Remembering that I will be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important." If all you had was the next 24 hours, my guess is that there would be a change in what you did with your hours. My guess is you would say that what you did in that 24 hours was actually more vital, more valuable, more alive, because you made choices to seize the time, to seize the day. So James is telling us, don't boast. Like, I've got a plan, and someday's coming, and I'm going to live forever, and I'm going to have all the time in my life to deal with the stuff today, because in the future there's going to be a good payday for me, a big joyous day. He says, no. Stop and say, don't boast that way. Stop and say, if God wills, If I don't have tomorrow, have I lived today in the right way? Second thing he challenges us on is this idea of choices. Will my life consist of living out my plan, or is my life about living his will for me? His will for me. Look at what he says again in verse 14. He says, why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. Isn't that interesting? We don't really know what's going to happen tomorrow, do we? We got a pretty good idea of what's going to happen tomorrow. We think we know what's going to happen tomorrow. But never confuse human ingenuity and wisdom and intelligence with foretelling the future. Let me explain. We get used to thinking we know a lot, and we really do. Like, who in the world could have ever come up with a microchip? We did, right? Who could have ever landed a man on the moon? We did, right? Who could figure out how to build a skyscraper that doesn't fall over in a California earthquake? Like, we did, right? Who figured out how to transplant an organ from one body into another one when the person in body A is dead? Like, we figured that out, right? So with all of that knowledge, it seems like we would know what's going to happen tomorrow. But we don't. In an algebraic equation, tomorrow is still the X factor in the equation. We don't know. Way back in 2001, in August, in fact, of 2001, Time magazine listed their winners and their losers. And in the loser category was none other than Mayor Rudy Giuliani. His marriage was falling apart. His health was not doing well. Politically, people didn't really like him. Nobody knew when Time magazine published that article naming him a loser that within 2 weeks, 9/11 was going to happen. After that, Time magazine called him the mayor of the world, a pillar of strength. In fact, Time magazine named him the 2001 man of the year. When you talk about people that are considered powerful leaders, successful, Rudy Giuliani would be in your short list of people. Who would have ever expected that that was going to happen? And everything would change. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You may walk into work and get a promotion. You may walk into work and get laid off. We don't know that. We don't know what's coming down tomorrow. And because we don't know what's coming down tomorrow, the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we put our plans in the hands of a God who actually does know what's going to happen tomorrow? He's all-knowing. Or do we just operate as if he doesn't exist and keep our plans and run our play the way we would keep our plans and the way we would run our play? Only God knows the future. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So because of that, how do we make sure that he is preeminent in everything that we're doing? Not my plan, but your will be done. Now, I want to look at this verse here in verse 17. It's a verse that's always bothered me a bit. So I want to spend a little time just looking at it. Look what the verse says. It says, anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. That's interesting. Anyone who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. So, you know, the first thing that kind of goes through your head is you kind of think, oh, you mean like it's more than just me not messing up? Like I could actually sin by doing nothing? Because most of us think sin is actually going out, you know, punching somebody in the eye, cutting somebody off in traffic and doing something, giving them a symbol that's not appropriate, or stealing from our employer, or talking bad about something. We think sin is something that we commit, the sins of commission. But this passage seems to say that there are things that we leave undone that are right to do, and those are equally called sin. So I began to look at this word here for sin to try to understand it. The word here that's used for sin is not the word that means transgression. Transgression is the Greek word that refers to breaking the law or doing something against the holy law of God. The word here is the word that means to miss the mark or to fall short. In other words, this particular word here is the word that Paul uses in Romans when he says, all have sinned, same word, and fall short of the glory of God. It's like an archery term. They used to use this in shooting an arrow. You shoot an arrow at the bullseye, and if you miss the bullseye, it fell short. It was sin. It erred. It was off the mark. When it comes to the glory of God, when we do or say or act or fail to act in such a way that we fall short of God's plan, His glory, what He desires, how He made us, what He gave us to do in this day, when we fail to do that, we miss the mark. We fall short of God's glory. So here's what this passage is telling us. That if I plow through a day, and in the course of me plowing through a day to accomplish my plan, I know that there are things that I ought to be doing during the day that God wants me to do. They are His will. And I say, God, I'll do those someday. Not today. I'll do those someday. I'll get around to that some point time in the future. But today, I am way too busy. I got my plan going. I'm not going to get everything done. If I do that, according to this passage, I've sinned. In other words, I've missed the glory that God wants to express in my life. And when I miss the glory that God wants to express in my life, I'm also forfeiting the blessing. I'm forfeiting the goodness of God that He wants to work through me. I'm setting that aside. And I'm missing out. I'm not fully human. I'm not fully expressing the design of the Creator for me. I'm not fully alive in Him. I'm not listening to the voice of His Spirit who is with me. I'm missing out on all of that. And so today, while it's today, seizing the day is to say, God, what are the right things that You want me to do today? And doing those which fully expresses the glory of God in me, what He intends for my life to look like. Now, as we wrap up here, I want to be very practical, okay? So I don't want to just leave with this big theological concept. I want to make sure that this comes down in a way that we can get it. So I'm going to give you three very specific applications. So the first application is this. We need to be cautious when banking on someday as this glorious someday out there that we're going to find it. It's going to happen to us. This glorious idea of a someday. Too many of us are putting off life today because someday something amazing is going to happen. Someday I'm going to have all the money I need to do anything I want to do. Someday I'm going to be able to stand at the highest mountain that I can climb, and I'm going to stand at the top and I'm going to be the king of the world. Someday I'm going to get my PhD and I'll just feel so fulfilled. Someday I'm going to meet the person of my dreams and we'll get married and we'll live happily ever after. Someday, someday, someday. But today, like I'm just going through the motions of today to get by. Many of us live that way and we dream of this glorious someday. Let me just tell you guys that the glorious someday is going to be a big letdown. It's going to be a big letdown. LeBron James, after his first NBA championship, a week after, he's interviewed and he said, this is just terrible. Like 48 hours is all this lasted. I spent my whole life from kid ball to AAU ball to high school ball, skipping college, going into the NBA. I've spent every day of my life practicing to get better and better and better to win this championship. And he said, as soon as it's over and the confetti falls, the champagne corks pop, and we go through a parade through the street, everybody acts like it's no big deal and gets back to normal. They just go back to their own lives. And I'm like, wait a minute. Where's the glory? Where's the fun? Where's the excitement? Where is it? You say, well, I'd trade places with him. Well, maybe you would. But you'd find out the same thing. Those glorious moments don't last. And so the day that you succeed at your dreams, from that moment forward, there's this diminishing return that begins to come and you become dissatisfied. And it may be 48 hours. Or if you find the woman of your dreams, it may be 48 months. Or if you choose poorly, no, we won't go there. I'll be in trouble. So here's the deal. There's really only one glorious someday. And for the person who's put their faith and trust in Jesus Christ, that glorious someday is the day that you actually open your eyes and stand in the presence of Jesus and look into his face. And on that day, everything for all of eternity, everything you dreamed of, all of your deepest desires will be completely and totally fulfilled. And God is not going to give us anything short of that because he loves us so much. So there's only one glorious someday. So what are you doing today? What are you doing today? Second principle is this. We need to plan. I'm not telling you not to plan. We need to plan. But we need to plan recognizing that God is in control of time. So God actually controls time. We need to remember that it's in God's hands. Time is in God's hands. And so every time we make a plan, we need to make a tentative plan because God may want to redirect it tomorrow. And when we make plans with open hands, we're flexible, pliable, so that he can take us where we need to go, not where we think we need to go. The third principle is this. We need to squeeze as much of someday as we can into today. Squeeze as much of someday into today. Now, at the very beginning of the message, I ask you guys a question. I say, if you only had 30 days left, just 30 days, that's all you had left, what would be the one thing that you would absolutely make sure that you got done in those 30 days? Now, as you thought about that, let me take a few things off your plate, okay? I'm not talking about skydiving or Rocky Mountain climbing or going 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu. Like, that's not what I'm talking about, okay? All of us have these kind of bucket list things, but you know what you find out? If you only have a short period of time to live, the bucket list things are simply ideas. There are much more important things than this. I'm also not talking about quitting. I think if you quit and partied for 30 days, you'd find that you would end and go, wow, that was a waste of time. I just missed 30 days. I'm asking you a more direct, deeper question. So what if you could take that one thing that you would do and actually squeeze it into today? Do it today. Right now. Like before this day gets over. I mean, some of you guys are thinking about what that might be, and your heart starts beating a little bit faster, and you get a little perspiration on your head, and all of a sudden you go, whoa, if I was doing that today, wow, that would be huge. And all of a sudden, what you've got back, you've got life back again. You've gone back into living mode. And anytime what you're thinking about causes you to sweat a little bit again, and makes you a little bit nervous and goes, wow, if I pulled that off, that would be unbelievable. Then you're living again. You're back in the game. You're not in the grind anymore. You're not waiting for Sunday. You're back in the game. So let me just be really practical because James says this. Anyone who knows what's right to do and doesn't do it, so what are some things that are right to do that you could do today? Here's one. Call your mother. Seriously. Call your mother. She may need to hear from you today. She may need to hear from you today. What are some other things? Maybe there's a debt that you need to forgive. Or there's a wrong that you need to make right. Maybe there's somebody that 10 years ago, you did something and it bothers you. And you don't want to go to the grave with that on your conscience. To pick up the phone and do it today. Maybe today, you would say, I've got something in my life, maybe an addiction, a habit, that I need to decide today, this is the last day. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to get the help I need to deal with this now. I'm not going to put it off till Sunday. Today's the day. I'm going to do it today. Maybe it's to tell people you love them. Maybe it's to share that with other people. I don't know. But what is it? What is it? What is it that you would do today? Maybe it's to actually start spending some time with God. When I had my cancer diagnosis and I went in for surgery, I had some really interesting thoughts go through my head. One of the thoughts that went through my head is, they were putting me under anesthesia, and I didn't know how much cutting they were actually going to do. And anytime they do that, you know, it's always interesting what could happen. And so I thought about this. I said, you know, I may wake up from this and actually be face to face with Jesus. And then this really interesting thought just floated through my head. When I stand face to face with Jesus, will I be looking at Jesus simply as my Savior? Or will I be looking at Jesus as my Savior and as a very close personal friend? Because I've spent time every day talking to Him, listening to Him, learning from Him, studying His truth, trying to apply it in my life, watching what He does in me and grow with that. So when we get together, we've got something to talk about. Because we've been talking together for 50 years. And some would say, you know, I don't have time for that. 183 is so crowded. Like, it takes me so long. Someday, Jesus will become my friend. Someday, I'll spend time in His Word and in prayer. Maybe today is the Sunday. Like, I'm going to start now to get to know the one who gave His life for me. Maybe some of you are exploring faith and you've just never got around to actually taking the step of putting your trust in Jesus. Today would be a really good day to do that. What is it? To him who knows what's right to do today, but puts it off for someday, you miss God's glory being reflected and expressed in you, and you miss the blessing that goes with that. Don't put off living till someday. I'm going to ask you just to bow your heads for just a moment here. And while you have your head bowed, I want you to very clearly personalize this. If I had 30 days to live, here's the question I want you to think about just for a moment. If I had 30 days to live, what would I absolutely make sure that I did? And then commit to do that thing this week. It'll change your life.